Welcome to our deep dive into the world of startups.
Ooh, fun.
We're going to be tackling the journey from that initial light bulb moment.
Right, at Spark.
All the way to figuring out your exit strategy.
The whole enchilada.
Our guide for this trek is Girish Cuddy's Founder's Playbook.
And you've picked a good time for this because this book really gets into the nitty-gritty of real-world startups.
So not just theory.
Exactly. It's like having a seasoned founder.
Oh, wow.
Sitting down with you, sharing their, you know, war stories and lessons learned.
Exactly. You know how we all have those amazing ideas?
Oh, yeah.
That we're sure will change the world?
Of course.
Well, Cody doesn't shy away from the fact that a lot of those ideas, they don't always survive contact with the real world.
Most startups fail. It's a tough pill to swallow.
It is.
But I find it refreshing that he doesn't dwell on the negative.
Okay.
He provides a framework to actually navigate those challenges.
So it's like a compass and a toolkit.
Think of it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Packed with principles and practices.
Okay.
Drawn from his own experience in the startup trenches.
Okay. So less about guaranteeing success.
Right.
More about just giving you the tools to kind of navigate this unpredictable terrain of starting and growing a business.
Absolutely. And he starts with something that's often overlooked.
Okay.
The right mindset.
That's interesting. Yeah, he has this great quote.
Yeah.
The entrepreneur's mindset isn't just about having courage or confidence.
Right.
It's a composite of resilience, adaptability, curiosity, humility, vision, and the willingness to grow.
It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
But it gets to the heart of what it takes
to
thrive as an entrepreneur.
Have you ever experienced that moment where you pour your heart and soul into a project?
Oh, all the time.
Only to realize it's just not hitting the mark with your audience.
Oh, yeah. You spend months perfecting a feature and then crickets. Nobody uses it.
So how does this whole resilience thing play out in the real world?
Well, a resilient founder sees that failure as data.
Interesting.
They don't give up. They use that feedback to learn, adapt.
Okay.
And come back stronger.
It's almost like a muscle you have to build.
Yeah, okay.
This ability to bounce back from setbacks.
And resilience goes hand in hand with adaptability.
Yeah.
Think back to the time you had to pivot.
Oh, yeah.
From targeting small retailers to going after enterprise clients.
Yeah.
Remember how much that decision?
It shook things up.
It did.
Yeah.
But you adapted. And that's the beauty of startups.
Okay.
They rarely follow a linear path.
That's so true.
You have to be willing to zig and zag.
Yeah.
Adjust your course based on what the market is telling you.
It's like navigating a jungle.
Totally.
Constantly hacking away at the undergrowth.
Yeah.
And kind of adjusting your direction based on what you find.
That brings us to another key ingredient.
Okay.
Of the entrepreneur's mindset.
Uh-huh.
Curiosity.
Okay.
This constant desire to learn and grow.
Yeah.
Cotta emphasizes the importance of reading, asking questions, seeking out mentors, and never being afraid to experiment.
What are some ways that you stay curious and kind of fuel your own learning journey?
For me, it's about staying connected to what's happening in the industry.
So, like, how do you do that?
Whether it's diving into industry reports, listening to podcasts like this one, or attending conferences.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for those nuggets of insight.
Oh, wow.
That spark new ideas.
Interesting.
And I'm a big believer in mentorship.
Oh, nice.
Finding those people who've been there, done that.
Yeah.
And can offer guidance.
Based on their experience.
Exactly.
I'm a podcast junkie too.
Of course.
But I also find that reading books outside of my usual areas of expertise.
Interesting.
Helps me connect dots that I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
It's like cross training for your brain.
Yeah, it is.
I love
that. Okay. So we've talked about the mindset, but let's get practical. How can we start validating our ideas before we invest too much time and energy?
Oh, good question.
Because let's be real, we all think our ideas are amazing.
Right.
But the market might have a different opinion.
That's where Cote's emphasis on lean principles comes in.
Yeah.
He says, validation isn't about doubting your instincts.
Okay.
It's about confirming or refining them with real-world feedback.
So how can someone practically apply these principles?
Think of it as a cycle. The build, measure, learn loop.
Okay.
You start with a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, busy parents need a quick and easy way to order groceries online.
Okay.
You build a minimum viable product,
uh-huh.
which is the simplest version of your product that tests that core assumption.
So in this case, instead of building a full-blown app with all the bells and whistles,
you're right.
You might just start with a simple landing page.
Yeah.
Where people can sign up to be notified when the grocery delivery service launches.
Exactly. It's not about winning design awards at this stage. It's about gauging real user interest.
So you're looking for validated learning.
Yes.
Not vanity metrics.
Correct.
Can you give me an example of the difference between those two?
Sure. Imagine you launch that landing page and you get thousands of views.
Okay.
Sounds great.
That's great.
Sounds great. A vanity metric, like page views, doesn't tell you if people are actually interested in your service.
So what would be a validated learning metric in this scenario?
It's about looking beyond the surface.
Okay.
Instead of celebrating those thousands of views,
yeah.
you focus on how many people actually click that sign up button.
Okay.
That's a concrete action.
Uh-huh.
That indicates real interest and intent.
That's a much more powerful indicator.
It is.
And that's what drives your next iteration, right?
You got it.
You use that feedback to refine your product or even pivot in a different direction.
Precisely. You learn, you adjust, you keep moving forward.
Now, speaking of moving forward, one of the biggest challenges for startups is scaling efficiently.
Oh, it's huge.
How does Kadi recommend leveraging automation and AI to tackle this?
He's a big advocate for using these technologies to streamline operations and free up your team to focus on higher value tasks.
It's like automating those repetitive tasks can really bog down your team.
Things like customer support responses, billing, or even data entry.
I see what you mean.
One company used AI to automate routine support questions, like password resets.
Wow.
This freed up their team to focus on building relationships with customers.
Okay.
And resolving more complex issues.
So it's not about replacing.
Right.
It's about amplifying human capabilities.
You got it.
But I know there are also concerns about potential pitfalls.
Yeah.
Does Kot address those?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He cautions against over-relying on AI decisions.
Okay.
And emphasizes the importance of careful data security and ethical considerations.
So it's a powerful tool.
Yeah.
But like any tool, it needs to be used responsibly.
It does. It's all about finding the right balance.
Right.
Using AI to augment our capabilities, not to blindly dictate our decisions.
So we've covered a lot of ground already.
We have.
From cultivating the right mindset to validating your idea and then leveraging technology for smart scaling.
Mm-hmm. What else does Kadi highlight as essential for startup success?
Well, one area that's becoming increasingly important is building and managing remote teams.
Especially with the rise of remote work.
And that comes with its own set of challenges and rewards, right?
Absolutely.
Like, how do you maintain a strong team culture and foster collaboration when everyone is spread across different locations and time zones?
That's where we'll pick up in the next part of our deep dive.
Ooh, a cliffhanger.
We'll explore Kadi's tips for mastering the art of remote team management.
Okay.
And building a thriving virtual work environment.
Looking forward to it. Welcome back to our deep dive into Girish Kadi's Founder's Playbook. Before we jump into the world of remote teams, let's revisit that other big topic. Kadi covers exit strategies.
Yeah.
I know it might seem early to think about an exit when you're just starting out.
But trust me, it's never too early to at least start thinking about your long game.
Oh.
Having an exit strategy in your back pocket, even if it's just a rough outline, can be a huge advantage down the road.
Mm, I see.
Life happens. Market conditions change. Opportunities pop up.
Yeah.
It's better to be prepared.
Okay, so let's break it down. What are some of the main exit strategies that Kot outlines?
Well, the most common one you hear about is an acquisition.
Uh-huh,
that's where a larger company
swoops
in and buys your startup.
Okay.
This happens all the time, especially in the tech world.
I can see how that could be a win-win for both sides.
Yeah.
The startup gets access to more resources and a wider market, while the bigger company gets to add a cool new technology or a talented team to their portfolio. It's like they found the missing piece of the puzzle.
Exactly. Another common exit strategy is a merger.
Okay.
That's where two companies combine to form a brand new entity.
Like joining forces.
It is. Like joining forces to create something even stronger.
I'm guessing this usually happens when companies have complementary strengths or want to expand into new markets together.
You got it.
Yeah.
Now, if you're dreaming big and your startup is really taking off, there's always the IPO or initial public offering.
Ah, yes. The IPO. That's where your company goes public and starts selling shares on the stock market.
Yeah. It's a major milestone for any startup.
It is.
But it's also a pretty complex process.
I bet.
Kadi doesn't sugarcoat it.
Okay.
He's very upfront about the demands that come with going public.
Like what?
Financial reporting. Increased transparency. Regulatory hurdles.
Yeah.
It's a big commitment.
Definitely not a decision to be made lightly. So are there any exit strategies for founders who are maybe looking to step back from the day-to-day operations, but aren't ready to sell the entire company?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One option is a management or employee buyout.
Oh, interesting.
That's where a team within the company pools their resources and buys the business from the founder.
It's like passing the torch to the people who know the company best.
And it can be a great way to ensure a smooth transition and maintain the company's culture. Another option is hiring a professional CEO to take over the reins.
Okay.
While the founder steps back into a more strategic role.
That makes a lot of sense. As a company grows, the founder's role might need to evolve too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now let's shift gears and talk about remote teams.
Okay.
This is something Cote really emphasizes because, let's face it, remote work is here to stay.
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever worked remotely or managed a remote team?
I have, and I've experienced both the joys and the challenges.
Yeah.
It's amazing to have that flexibility.
It is.
But it can also be tough to stay connected and maintain that sense of teamwork.
Right.
When you're not physically together.
That's a common struggle.
Yeah.
And Cote stresses that communication and collaboration are absolutely critical in remote setups.
It's not just about having the right tools. It's about creating the right culture and processes.
Exactly. So what kind of things does he recommend?
Well, he talks about the importance of having clear communication norms. This could be something as simple as agreeing on which channels you'll use for different types of communication.
Yeah, like using Slack for quick updates and email for more formal communication.
That makes sense. And what about team meetings? How do you make those effective in a remote setting?
Cote suggests having a structured agenda and sticking to it.
Oh.
It's also important to make sure everyone has a chance to participate, even those who might be more introverted in a virtual setting.
I've found that encouraging video calls can help a lot, especially for those quick check-ins.
Yeah.
It just adds a bit more human connection.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's all about finding ways to build rapport and trust, even when you're not face-to-face.
Right.
And celebrating wins, no matter how small,
I like that,
can go a long way in keeping morale high.
Now, beyond communication, what else is important for building a high-performing remote team?
Cote highlights the importance of documentation.
Okay.
When you're working remotely, it's crucial to have everything clearly documented.
So from standard operating procedures to project guidelines?
Exactly. So everyone knows what's expected of them.
Right.
And how to do things the right way, even if they can't just pop over to a colleague's desk for a quick clarification.
Makes sense.
And it helps onboard new team members more smoothly.
Right.
Regardless of their location.
So we've talked about communication documentation and even building trust in a remote environment.
Mm-hmm.
What about performance management? How do you ensure accountability when you're not physically supervising your team?
Cote suggests focusing on outcomes rather than hours worked.
Okay.
It's about setting clear goals and expectations.
Okay.
Then trusting your team to get the work done regardless of where or when they do it.
It's about shifting from a culture of presenteeism to a culture of results.
Exactly. And that requires a high level of trust on both sides. The manager needs to trust the team to deliver. And the team needs to trust that their contributions are valued, even if they're not constantly visible.
It's really about creating a culture of mutual respect and accountability.
Yeah.
And I imagine that takes conscious effort, especially when you're building a team from scratch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about something that can be really daunting,
cool.
especially for first-time founders market research.
Oh, yeah.
How do you even begin to understand your target audience?
Yeah, where do you even start? It can feel so overwhelming.
Cote breaks it down into two main approaches.
Okay.
Primary research and secondary research.
Okay.
Primary research is all about going directly to the source.
Okay.
It's about talking to potential customers, conducting surveys, and really getting a feel for what they need and want.
So it's about getting those firsthand insights.
Yes. And what about secondary research?
What's that?
That involves digging into existing data.
Okay.
Like industry reports, market studies, and competitor analysis.
It's like putting together a puzzle.
It is.
Using different pieces of information to form a complete picture of your target market.
Exactly. And once you have a good understanding of your market, Cote suggests creating customer personas.
Those are like those fictional but realistic profiles of your ideal customers.
Yes. I've heard that this can be a really helpful way to make your target audience feel more human.
They do.
It's about going beyond demographics and getting into the minds of your customers.
Okay.
Give them names, backstories, motivations, even pain points.
I see.
Right. Okay, can you give me an example?
Sure.
Imagine you're building a meal planning app.
Okay.
Your target audience might be busy working parents.
Right.
But instead of just thinking about them as a demographic,
okay,
you create a persona. Let's say Sarah, a working mom of two who wants to cook healthy meals.
Okay.
But struggles with time constraints and picky eaters.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Suddenly she's not just a statistic. She's a real person with real needs and challenges.
Right. So you can start thinking about how your app can solve Sarah's specific problems.
Exactly. How can you make meal planning quick and easy for her?
Yeah.
How can you offer healthy recipes that even her picky eaters will enjoy?
Interesting. So it's like you're not just designing an app, you're designing a solution for Sarah.
Precisely. And that's what makes customer personas so valuable.
Okay.
They help you humanize your target audience and make sure that every aspect of your business, from product development to marketing, is aligned with meeting their needs.
Now, speaking of alignment, one of the biggest challenges for startups is scaling efficiently.
Oh, yeah. It comes up again and again.
It does. It does. How does Kare recommend leveraging automation and AI to tackle this?
It's such a crucial piece of the puzzle.
It is.
In the early days, you might be able to get away with doing everything manually. But as you start to grow, those manual processes become major bottlenecks.
It's like trying to run a marathon with a backpack full of rocks.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
So where does automation come in?
Yeah, where does it come in?
Think of it as taking those rocks out of your backpack.
Okay.
Kare talks about automating things like routine customer support responses,
right,
billing processes, and even data entry.
Okay.
These are tasks that can easily be handled by software.
Okay.
Freeing up your team to focus on more strategic work.
That makes sense.
And what about AI? How does that fit into the picture?
I'm curious.
AI can take automation to the next level.
Okay.
It's about using intelligent systems to analyze data, identify patterns, and even make predictions.
Okay.
For example, you could use AI to analyze user behavior on your website and then personalize their experience based on what they're most interested in.
Wow. It's almost like having a superpower.
It is.
That allows you to anticipate what your customers need before they even know they need it.
That's a great way to put it. AI can help you make data-driven decisions and scale your operations in a way that wouldn't be possible with just human effort alone.
That's amazing. But I imagine there are also concerns about the potential pitfalls of AI.
Oh, of course.
Does Kare address those?
He does. He's very clear about the importance of using AI responsibly.
Okay.
He cautions against blindly relying on AI decisions.
Right.
And emphasizes the need for human oversight.
So it's not about replacing humans with machines.
Right.
It's about finding that right balance.
Exactly. Using AI to enhance our capabilities, not to dictate our every move. Now, let's talk about something that's often overlooked.
Okay.
In the excitement of building a product or launching a marketing campaign. Operational infrastructure.
This is the less glamorous side of this startup world, right?
It is, but it's absolutely essential.
Okay.
Kare compares it to the foundation of a house.
Oh, wow.
If you don't have a strong foundation, the whole thing can crumble.
So what are some of the key elements of a solid operational infrastructure?
Well, it starts with having the right systems in place. This could include accounting software to manage your finances. Project management tools to keep your team on track.
Okay.
And communication platforms to facilitate collaboration.
So it's like those tools that streamline your workflows.
Right.
And eliminate unnecessary friction. And I'm guessing documentation is important here too.
Absolutely. Kare stresses the importance of documenting everything.
Okay.
From standard operating procedures to key performance indicators.
I see.
It's about making sure that everyone on the team is on the same page and knows how to do things the right way.
It's like creating a playbook for your business.
Exactly.
So that anyone can step in and know exactly what to do.
And he also talks about the importance of having a system for tracking your financials.
Right, because if you don't know where your money's going,
exactly,
you're not going to be in business for very long.
Kare recommends regular financial reviews.
Okay.
And using dashboards to monitor key metrics like your burn rate and runway.
Can you explain those terms for those who might not be familiar?
Sure. Your burn rate is the rate at which you're spending your cash each month.
Okay.
And your runway is how many months you can operate with your current cash on hand.
So it's essentially a measure of how long you can keep the lights on
before
you need to raise more funding or become profitable.
Exactly. Now let's shift gears and talk about product development.
Okay.
Specifically, the concept of building a minimum viable product or MVP.
Uh-huh.
This is a core principle of the lean startup methodology.
Mm-hmm.
And Kare really emphasizes its importance.
Okay, I've heard this term before.
Yeah.
But can you refresh my memory on what it means?
It's about building the simplest, most basic version of your product that you can get into the hands of users as quickly as possible.
Okay.
The goal is to get real-world feedback early on.
Uh-huh.
So you can iterate and improve your product
right.
based on what users actually need and want.
So it's about validating your assumptions before investing a ton of time and money into building something that might not even be what the market wants.
Exactly. And Kosei emphasizes that an MVP is not about sacrificing quality.
Okay.
It's about focusing on the core value proposition of your products.
Okay.
And delivering that in a way that's reliable and usable.
So what are some practical tips for building an MVP?
Kosei suggests using no-code or low-code solutions
okay.
to build prototypes quickly and cheaply.
Okay.
It's also crucial to get feedback from potential users early and often.
So you're treating your MVP as a learning tool.
Yeah.
Constantly gathering feedback and iterating based on what you learn.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the next phase.
Okay.
Iterative product development.
Uh-huh.
It's a cycle of build, measure, or learn.
Okay.
You build a new feature,
yeah.
measure its impact using data and user feedback,
okay.
and then learn from those results to inform your next iteration.
So it's a continuous process of improvement.
Yeah.
So once you have a product that's resonating with your target audience, how do you get it out into the world? How do you craft a go-to-market strategy?
Kosei emphasizes the importance of starting with a deep understanding
okay.
of your target segments and personas.
We talked about that earlier.
We did.
It's about knowing who you're trying to reach.
Yeah.
And tailoring your message to their specific needs and pain points.
Right. And once you know who your ideal customer is,
okay.
you need to figure out how to position your product in the market.
How do you do that?
What makes it unique?
Okay.
What problem does it solve that no one else is solving?
That's your unique selling proposition, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's what sets you apart from the competition.
Okay.
And it's what you need to communicate clearly and concisely in your messaging.
So it's not just about listing features. It's about communicating the value
right.
that your product provides.
Exactly. And once you have your messaging nailed down,
okay.
you need to choose the right channels
okay.
to reach your target audience.
And that could be anything from social media to content marketing to paid advertising.
Right. Yeah.
It depends on where your target audience hangs out.
And it's important to test different channels
okay.
and see what works best.
So trial and error a little bit.
And once you have your go-to-market strategy in place,
okay.
you need to figure out your sales and pricing strategy.
This is where a lot of founders get stuck, right?
Yeah.
How do you price your product in a way that's both competitive and profitable?
Kosei offers a lot of practical advice on this. He talks about different pricing models.
Okay.
Like freemium-tiered pricing and value-based pricing.
Uh-huh.
And he encourages founders to experiment
right.
with different pricing strategies
okay.
to see what resonates best with their target market.
So it's about finding that sweet spot where you're providing value to your customers
right.
while also ensuring the long-term sustainability of your business.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, as your startup begins to grow and you start hiring more people,
uh-huh.
it's crucial to build a high-performing team.
This is one of the most challenging
yeah.
but also most rewarding aspects of building a company.
I think so, too.
You're not just building a product. You're building a group of people
right.
who share your vision and are passionate about what you're creating.
Yeah. And I imagine company culture plays a big role in that.
It does.
It does.
How do you even begin to define that?
Kosei emphasizes the importance of defining your company culture early on.
So like how...
What are the values and principles
okay.
that will guide your team's behavior?
Okay.
What kind of work environment do you want to create?
So it's about attracting people who not only have the right skills,
right.
but also fit in with your company's values and way of working.
Absolutely. And once you've hired those awesome people,
yeah.
it's important to provide them with clear expectations,
okay.
regular feedback, and opportunities for growth.
Okay.
Kosei also stresses the importance of creating a culture of transparency and open communication.
So it's about creating a workplace where everyone feels valued, respected, and empowered.
Yeah.
to contribute their best work.
Exactly. And that becomes even more crucial when you're managing remote teams.
Right, because how do you maintain that sense of connection and camaraderie
right.
when everyone is spread across different locations?
What kind of insights does he offer for that?
He talks about the importance of using the right communication tools and technology.
Yeah.
But it goes beyond that. It's about fostering a sense of community.
Right.
Through virtual events, mm-hmm. online team building activities.
Yeah.
And even just regular check-ins to see how everyone is doing.
It's about those small gestures that make people feel seen and appreciated.
Right.
Even when they're not physically present.
Exactly. And it's also about setting clear expectations.
Right.
And trusting your team to get the work done.
So it's a balance of structure and flexibility.
It is. Now, this brings us to another important aspect of building a successful startup.
Okay.
Navigating the competitive landscape.
Yeah. This is where it gets real.
You're no longer operating in a vacuum.
Right.
You're up against other companies vying for those same customers.
And that can feel intimidating.
Especially for new founders.
It can.
But Kate provides a framework for approaching competition strategically.
I like it.
So what's the first step?
It starts with understanding your competitors.
Okay.
Who are they?
Okay.
What are their strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah.
How are they positioning themselves in the market?
It's like doing reconnaissance.
It is.
Gathering intel on the other players in the game.
Exactly. And once you have a good understanding of your competitors,
okay.
you need to figure out what sets you apart. What's your unique selling proposition?
What value do you offer that they don't?
Exactly. That's what will attract customers to you instead of them.
I like it.
And Kate emphasizes the importance of being adaptable.
Okay.
The competitive landscape is constantly evolving.
It is.
So you need to be able to adjust your strategy accordingly.
It's about being agile and responsive to changes in the market. Always looking for ways to improve and innovate.
Absolutely. He talks about staying informed about industry trends,
mm-hmm.
monitoring your competitors' moves,
okay.
and being willing to pivot when necessary.
So it's about embracing the fact that in the startup world, the only constant is change.
It is. Now for the million-dollar question.
Oh, here you go.
How do you fund all of this? Startup finances can be pretty intimidating.
They can.
Especially for first-time founders.
Yeah.
But Kate does a great job of demystifying startup finance.
Okay, good.
He starts by emphasizing the importance of understanding your financials.
Yeah.
This means tracking your income and expenses.
Okay.
Creating a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And monitoring your cash flow.
So it's about being financially savvy.
It is.
And making data-driven decisions about your spending.
Right. He talks about using accounting software mm-hmm. to streamline your financial processes
okay.
and generating regular financial reports
right.
to track your progress.
And he stresses the importance of having a clear understanding
yeah.
of your burn rate and runway.
Right. Yes. You need to know how long your cash will last.
Right.
And when you'll need to raise more funding or become profitable.
So you're not caught off guard when you're down to your last dollar.
Exactly. And speaking of funding,
okay.
Kate covers different options available to startups.
Such as?
Including bootstrapping,
okay.
friends and family,
mm-hmm.
angel investors, venture capital, and even crowdfunding.
It's like a menu of funding options.
Oh, like that.
And you choose the one that best suits your appetite
yeah.
or your stage of growth.
Your stage of growth. I like that.
And he also stresses the importance of building strong relationships with investors.
Right. It's not just about taking their money.
Okay.
It's about treating them as partners in your journey.
So open communication, transparency,
yeah.
and managing expectations are key.
Absolutely. It's about building trust and demonstrating
okay.
that you're a responsible steward of their investment.
Now, all of this sounds incredibly challenging.
It is.
But I imagine it's also incredibly rewarding.
It is. But as with any challenging endeavor,
yeah.
there are bound to be setbacks.
Right.
How does Kate address the inevitable ups and downs of the startup journey?
He's very real about the fact that entrepreneurship is a roller coaster ride.
It is. There will be moments of exhilaration and moments of despair.
And resilience is key.
It is.
That ability to bounce back from setbacks and keep moving forward.
Absolutely. Kate talks about having a growth mindset,
mm-hmm.
learning from your mistakes.
Okay.
And being willing to pivot when necessary.
So it's about embracing failure as a learning opportunity.
Exactly. And he stresses the importance of having a strong support network.
Okay.
Surround yourself with mentors, advisors,
right.
and fellow entrepreneurs who can offer guidance and encouragement
mm-hmm.
when things get tough.
It's like having a cheering section, but also a group of people
yes.
who can offer practical advice and help you navigate challenges.
Now, in addition to the practical aspects of building a startup, Kate also delves into the importance of leadership and company culture.
Because at the end of the day, it's people who build companies, right?
Yes.
And a strong company culture can make all the difference in attracting and retaining top talent.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Koki emphasizes that as a founder, you're not just building a product or a service, you're building a team and a culture.
So where do you start? How do you define your company culture?
He talks about starting with your core values.
Okay.
What are the principles that will guide your team's behavior? What kind of work environment do you want to create?
It's about being intentional about the kind of culture you want to foster.
Yeah. And once you have those values defined, how do you bring them to life?
He talks about the importance of living those values every day.
Yeah.
Both as a leader and as a company.
It's about leading by example.
Yeah.
And making sure that your actions align with your words.
And creating a culture of learning and continuous improvement, where it's safe to experiment, take risks, and learn from mistakes.
It's about creating a psychologically safe environment.
Exactly.
Where people feel comfortable trying new things and pushing boundaries.
Right. And that becomes even more important as your company grows.
It does. How do you scale your culture as your team expands and becomes more distributed?
That's a great question. What insights does Kot Air offer?
He talks about the importance of codifying your values.
Okay.
Creating clear processes and systems.
Okay.
And empowering your team to make decisions.
It's about putting those values into writing.
Yeah.
And making them a visible part of your company's DNA.
Exactly. And it's also about staying connected to your employees.
Okay.
And maintaining a sense of community, even as your team grows larger and more geographically dispersed.
Now, as your startup matures, you might start thinking about expanding beyond your initial market.
Right.
What does Kot Air have to say about international expansion?
He acknowledges that it can be a complex undertaking.
Okay.
But he also highlights the immense opportunities that come with going global.
So where do you start? What are the key considerations?
He stresses the importance of thorough market research.
Okay.
You need to understand the specific needs and preferences of each market you enter.
Because what works in one country might not work in another.
Exactly. You need to be sensitive to cultural nuances and tailor your product and marketing accordingly.
And what about logistics? Things like regulations and language barriers.
Kot Air talks about the importance of finding the right local partners who can help you navigate those complexities.
So it's about building relationships and leveraging local expertise.
Exactly. And he also emphasizes the importance of building a diverse global team with people who have different perspectives and experiences.
So it's not just about expanding your customer base.
Right.
It's about expanding your worldview and building a truly global company.
Now, let's talk about something that's often overlooked.
Okay.
Especially in the early stages of a startup.
Okay.
Corporate governance, ethics, and social responsibility.
These are the things that define your company's values and how you operate in the world, right?
Exactly. Kot Air argues that these aren't just nice-to-haves. They are essential for building a sustainable and successful business.
So what kind of things does he recommend?
He talks about establishing clear governance structures.
Okay.
Like a board of directors to ensure accountability and transparency.
It's about having checks and balances in place
to
make sure the company is operating ethically and responsibly.
Right. And he also stresses the importance of having a code of ethics.
Okay.
That guides your company's decisions and actions.
So it's about defining your moral compass and making sure that your business practices align with your values.
He also encourages startups to think about their social impact.
So it's not just about making money.
Right.
It's about making a positive contribution to the world.
Exactly. This could involve supporting local communities, reducing your environmental footprint, or promoting diversity and inclusion.
It's about being a force for good in the world, even as you're building a successful business.
And I think that brings us to the final and perhaps most important piece of advice that Kot Air offers.
Okay.
Embrace continuous learning and growth.
Yeah. This is a theme that's woven throughout the entire book.
It is. It's about always being a student.
Yeah.
Constantly seeking out new knowledge and perspectives.
He talks about reading books, attending conferences, connecting with mentors.
Yeah.
Always being open to new ideas and ways of doing things.
It's about being curious, open-minded, and always willing to learn and grow.
Which makes me wonder, what are some of the things you're learning right now? What are you curious about?
Well, I'm really fascinated by the intersection of technology and sustainability.
Oh, cool.
I'm spending a lot of time reading about how startups are using AI.
Interesting.
And other emerging technologies.
Mm-hmm. Expert speaker. To address climate change and create a more sustainable future.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
It is. I'm trying to get better at delegating. As a founder, it's easy to fall into that trap of thinking you have to do everything yourself. But I'm learning that letting go And trusting my team is essential for scaling the business.
It is. That's a great example of how continuous learning can apply to all aspects of building a startup.
Yeah.
And it's not just about acquiring knowledge.
Right.
It's also about applying it.
Kate encourages founders to experiment.
He does.
Take risks and even fail sometimes.
Because failure is just another opportunity to learn and grow.
It's like that saying, you either win or you learn.
Right.
And in the world of startups, there are a lot of opportunities to learn.
There are a lot.
So true. And that brings us to Kate's final piece of advice.
Okay.
Embrace the journey.
Ooh, I like that.
He reminds us that building a startup is not a sprint, it's a marathon.
It is.
There will be ups and downs, moments of exhilaration and moments of frustration.
But it's important to enjoy the ride.
It is.
Celebrate the milestones and learn from every experience.
Because at the end of the day, it's not just about building a successful business. Yeah. It's about personal growth, self-discovery, and making a positive impact on the world.
It's something worth striving for.
As we wrap up this deep dive into Founder's Playbook, I want to leave you with a quote from Girish Kote that really resonated with me.
All right.
He says, the entrepreneurial journey is as emotional as it is strategic.
Okay.
By acknowledging both the human element, your fears, ambitions, relationships, and the business element metrics, funnels, financials, roadmaps, you can emerge as a well-rounded founder, ready to face the unknown.
It's a powerful reminder that building a startup is both an art and a science. It requires both head and heart.
I like that.
And by embracing both,
you
can not only achieve success, but also create something truly meaningful.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been fun.
We hope you found it insightful and inspiring.
Until next time.
Keep learning.
Keep growing.
And keep building.